Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. This is your host, Colin Cattell. On the line with me today is James West. He is the CEO of Midas Letter. James, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Colin. Great to be here.
You have been with the Midas Letter, which you founded, of course, for years and years, but it would be hard to ignore the fact that things are really growing. You've got a fantastic and high-quality studio that I envy now up in Toronto. What's been going on with the Midas Letter these days?
Well, I'll tell you, Colin, cannabis has catalyzed a conversion of the Midas Letter from a mining-centric publication to a multimedia digital business platform that is more or less focused on video production now. And so thanks to cannabis and the explosion in cannabis valuation, we have basically decided to focus on the market that is the hottest, and it has financed a revolution in our entire existence.
That's excellent. I know that you're working on a documentary at the moment. I don't know how much you can say about it, but it's going to be extremely well-financed, and it's going to be based around cannabis in Canada and how Canada has stolen the spotlight for the public markets for cannabis.
That's true. It's actually not so much focused on the public markets. In fact, the public market component is kind of just a side note. It's more an examination of the geopolitical causes that enabled Canada to become the leader in the G7 in terms of a comprehensive federal strategy for both medical and recreational cannabis.
Excellent. Well, that's going to be a great piece, very informative. I can't wait to see it. And we don't talk about cannabis too much on Palisade Radio because we do try to stick to the mining space, but it is worth noting that Palisade Global has been participating in several cannabis deals. And if you're in the cannabis space the last couple years, especially getting in on those private rounds before you go public, it's hard not to have that being the best performing portion of one's portfolio, which it certainly has been for us, and it's been a fantastic way to stick to mining but offset those mining losses with some gains while we wait for things to turn.
Yeah, you bet. Well, among the things that we've launched at Midas Letter is a set of indices focused on cannabis. And if you look at there's four indexes. There's the large cap index, which is all Canadian listed cannabis companies with a market cap over 500 million. There are now 10 of those companies. And this index we launched regressively populated it from January 1st, 2015. And that large index has returned 6.4 times capital invested from that date, which is, you know, essentially a 600% win in 2 years. So, but the interesting thing that we've noticed in this index exercise, so we have that large cap index, we have a small cap index, all Canadian companies between 100 and 500 million. We have a venture index, which is all companies listed on the TSX Venture in the cannabis space. And then we have the CSE index, which are all companies in the cannabis space listed on the CSE. And the interesting thing is the CSE index has returned 15.7 times capital invested from January 1st, 2015 in the same time frame, which is kind of remarkable to us, since even the large cap companies, a portion of those originated on the CSE, and in both other indexes, many of the companies have sort of moved over from the CSE as they've grown. So our experience, and this is remarkable for nothing more than people overlook this fact, is that the CSE is actually the most profitable cannabis exchange in the world right now.
Well, yeah, that's pretty incredible, especially considering the fact that the CSE is a relatively new exchange. They certainly have been open to more innovative ideas. The venture exchange was not really accepting of the cannabis stocks at first, so that's great for the CSE. James, I want to ask you, boom bust cycles would suggest that at some point here soon, the cannabis stocks are going to get bought to the point where there's not any more money to rush into them. And then, of course, once the gains start to slow down, people will look for other places to put their money. Do you have a feeling of where we are at this point in that cycle?
I do, in fact. When it comes to cannabis, the bubble will burst when the race to the bottom begins in the cost of production of cannabis on a per gram basis. The launch of the recreational rules in Canada that actually come into effect on October 17th will begin that process of competition on price per gram. There are, in the Toronto area alone, for example, 88 non-licensed companies, so basically criminal enterprises that currently will deliver cannabis to your home at a fraction of the cost of the licensed producers and in a fraction of the time frame. Like, you can get delivery to your house in an hour with a phone call of cannabis from an illegal source right now. They operate out in the open. The sort of the expectation is that the government is going to shut all of these things down, but there are so many of them, and they have been supplying cannabis to recreational users in Canada for over 50 years in some cases. And so that is the beginning. I think that when the balance sheets in 2019 of the cannabis companies fail to demonstrate a significant increase as a result of recreational legalization because of this race to the bottom in cannabis prices, I think that is going to sort of, that's where the bubble starts to pop. And when it pops, it's going to deflate just as quickly or faster rather than it inflated. And, you know, coincident with the crypto market that has been consuming a lot of the capital alongside cannabis that would otherwise be going to the mining space, at least in part, I think that's when you're going to start to see mining explorers and producers become the beneficiaries of the stampede out of those sort of bubble assets, you know, because I think there's a good possibility that it coincides with a recession. Because cyclically, we're definitely due. The EU has started to, or announced that they're going to start to tighten, wind down the balance sheet. The Fed is limited on what it can do. And so there's all these sort of things coming to a convergence point that, at least from my experience, suggests that I'm going to be buying mining stocks. In fact, I'm currently buying mining stocks and evaluating other mining plays that are coming together right now in anticipation of that. So I'd say mid-2019, you're going to start to see money start to really flow into mining, I think.
Well, that's not too far around the corner, and that's a very good, encouraging thing to hear. I think looking at the commodity prices, they've been pretty strong. I probably sound like a broken record to many people in the audience because I've mentioned this several times, but the underlying commodity is performing well. The equity is not really getting a bid. And it would be hard to argue that some of that is not because of speculative capital rushing into the cannabis space. James, do you have any idea on just how big the cannabis space on the public market has gotten and, you know, what that is relative to mining?
Well, it's actually hard to put a number on the value of the cannabis space because there's 106 licensed ACMPR producers currently, that of which approximately, I'd say, 65 or 70 are publicly traded entities. So there's a big percentage of those are private. We have no data on what kind of money is going into those. But I can tell you, since the beginning of this year, $3 billion has gone into the cannabis space in Canada. And the collective market caps of all four indexes are worth, I'm just going to do a quick tally here, I'm going to say about $40 to $45 billion.
Yeah, just incredible. So you imagine if $3 billion rushed into the junior resource space, and at times in the past that probably has happened and hopefully will happen again. James, turning to commodities on a macro look at all the commodities, are there any in specific that are catching your attention, or are you of the opinion that when they go up, they will all go up and focus instead just on specific companies?
Well, I do believe that the next commodity cycle is going to be differentiated from those in the past, because I don't think precious metals are going to lead the cycle in complete opposition to normal patterns. So if you look at gold currently, it's really struggling and has been struggling. And the sort of the bull market in gold that has, to use your terms, been the output of broken records everywhere has just failed to materialize. And I think that in large part, that is because the perception is among the generation that would be replacing older gold bugs has turned to crypto. And crypto, I think, is undermining confidence in precious metals more dramatically than is generally appreciated, because the youth of today, I mean, the other side where we've spent a lot of time and effort is in crypto. I mean, we've been just globally scouring the world. I've talked to, different companies. I've got big positions in companies that are now kind of dormant. But the despite the problems of crypto and of, let's say, Bitcoin in particular, there is a broad perception among today's youth that the days of fiat currency and commodities-backed currencies are coming to an end. I don't necessarily agree with that, but because that belief is so widespread among today's youth, and especially among the contingent that would normally gravitate towards a libertarian, hard money, commodities-based mindset, I think that that's why gold and silver are not going to be recipients of the speculative, precious metals investor bid in this next cycle. I do believe that the cycle will be led by principally copper, because we have, a few catalysts in the copper space that are threatening to cause a spike in the price, which of course will cause a spike in investment. And to a lesser degree, lithium and cobalt are both, I mean, those markets are tiny compared to copper, and the whole electric car revolution. I mean, I'm just finishing work on a small corporate documentary about that. But it is happening. And so the electric car and the battery storage revolution that is occurring as a result of alternative energy sources is creating great demand for lithium and cobalt, but especially copper. You take the average automobile, there's four times more copper in a electric car than there is in a conventional gasoline automobile. So the demand pressures on copper are actually really growing, really building. And the even while the supply side is on the brink of a couple of supply side shocks, like for example, the I don't know exactly. I mean, the problem might be solved. I don't follow the mining market every day anymore. But for example, the unionized workers in Chile, who work for the number one copper producer in the world, is that produces 5% of the world's copper. They have demanded a minimum of $35,000 per member of the union before they even come back to the bargaining table. So that implies that there's a huge risk that 5% of the world's copper supply could go offline in a heartbeat. And that is, in and of itself, a supply side shock that would catalyze a spike in the copper price because, copper reserves are not that far ahead of copper usage. And so, losing 5% of the supply would be a dramatic effect. And as you probably know, and most experienced resource investors know, that usually a spike in one commodity can drive a whole bunch of interest into all the other commodities just because it's not just that thing that is making copper, more attractive. It's the other macroeconomic things like, the collapse of crypto investment, the collapse of cannabis investment when the bubble breaks, and suddenly all this hot money that has, essentially multiplied by a factor of 45 times over 3 years is now going to be looking for, a hot investment. And so hot money looks for hot trends, and they tend to exaggerate, fundamentally sourced spikes in commodity prices, but nonetheless, they will catalyze the onset, I think, of a new phase of a commodity cycle in terms of metal commodities.
Very good. Well, James, let's finish off here by going through any specific companies in the commodity space that you're interested in or suggesting to your reader base to start accumulating in anticipation of 2019.
Okay, well, my favorite copper company right now is Crown Mining, and I have been accumulating it at pretty low prices, and it's still super cheap. But they've got 43,101, 2 billion pounds of copper in the ground. Non-historic resources indicate that there's probably closer to 4 billion, They've got a super low CapEx starter, high grade pit that, you know, it has, it's in the, I think it's in the top 10 of undeveloped copper resources in the world. Currently has a market cap of, I think it's even under $10 million again. It keeps getting little bumps of interest. There's, you know, there's a little bit of promotion on it, and it's, you know, but it's starting to look a little frothy now. So that's my favorite copper one. In terms of the precious, like I say, the precious metals have not interested me that much. In the lithium space, I've been involved with a couple of companies that I really like, that have, you know, delivered tremendous performance to shareholders. Millennial Lithium comes to mind. Of course, Lithium One was a tremendous, or Lithium X rather, was a tremendous success for a lot of investors. And then in the cobalt sector, there are some companies that I've been following. I've got a couple of sort of sizey positions in some that are not yet public, but you know, cobalt's an interesting thing because I'm sure as most resource investors understand, it's produced as a byproduct of nickel and or silver and or copper mining. And so it's very seldom sort of produced as a primary metal. And so it's difficult to find companies to invest in that where your exposure is primarily to cobalt. If they're always tied up with, you know, mostly copper and nickel and silver, et cetera. So they're tough to get into, but that's where I'm looking in the mining space right now. Now, I've also been sort of watching lithium, or not lithium rather, but uranium with one eye, because mostly because you guys are pounding the drum on it all the time. And I think at some point you're definitely going to be right. I mean, you've already been right about where the bottom was, but I think for sure at some point you're going to be right on, you know, that the price has got to rise. The demand and supply intersection is, you know, if you look at the market, it looks like they've already crossed on a chart. So like, why isn't the price moving? I mean, I think you got to be right on that.
Yeah, well, we certainly agree with you there. And if you make a call for long enough, one day in the future, you'll be correct. So to add a little bit of humor there. So James, thank you for coming on the program. For any of our listeners that are not familiar with James, which is almost impossible, you can find his work at MidasLetter.com. James, any last words to add?
No, Colin. Just keep your tip up.
All right, perfect. Well, James, thanks for coming back on the program with us.
Sounds great. Thanks, Colin. Bye for now.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on?